Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Out.
many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
All right, today we have a little offline club. We do some things online, but not much yet. But anyway, it's titled, Don't Sell Mama's House. Depending on the topic, we might call it even sometimes, Don't Sell Grandma's House. But for today, it's Don't Sell Mama's House, and it's the property tax edition. All right. Now, if you own real estate, which is basically housing that is permanently attached to the ground, that is real estate, and your de facto co-owner and senior partner is the local taxing authority. All right? But you might say, well, co-owner, wait a minute. But look at the deed. The deed's got my name on it. Well, let me explain what a deed is. All a deed is a document that reflects the transference of title from, you know, person to person, entity to entity, and if any debt or liens were recorded against that property. But your senior de facto partner slash owner is the local taxing authority. So if you don't pay those property taxes, or if you don't pay the municipal water bill, Or in some places, if you don't pay the municipal electric bill, if you take municipal electricity, utilities, then your senior partner, which is the local taxing authority, all right, and somebody said this, if you got to pay taxes on it, you don't own it. I have to agree with them. All right. Now, you've got some ownership rights. You have the right to live in it. You have the right to rent it out, provided, particularly in the big cities and municipalities, provided you get a permit, which is short for permission, from your senior partner, which is a local taxing authority or local government, you know, then you have permission to, you know, put on an addition to your house or what. Not all places are like this, but, you need to learn more about the various municipalities because a lot of them are different. And you got over 19,000 of them in the United States. So if you don't pay those property taxes, your senior partner, all right, can put your property up for sale to set aside the debt on what you thought was exclusively your house. And there's a distinction between a house and a home. Let me go through that right now too. A house is a physical structure. It can be in the form of a piece of real estate, or can take place, that's a house, long and short of it. Now, your home can be housed within real estate, or it can be housed within a mobile home. Mobile homes are not real estate unless you permanently attach them to the ground, but mobile homes are private property. You own that mobile home outright 100%. Different rules apply to private property versus real estate. With real estate, you're going to get a tax bill every year, and depending on the city, that tax bill might go up now, you know, from year to year. A lot of times you can protest it and maybe get it lowered or whatever, but there's a tax bill with that. The city of Now, isn't this something? Your senior partner in real estate, they go around the city. Now they use drones in a lot of cases. And they say, all right, this property has gone up in value. And in many cases, if you add it on a swimming pool, if you put a shed and permanently attached it to the ground, you add it on a carport, well, the city says the property is more valuable now, so you get a higher tax bill. But look who is making the assessment. Your senior partner, the city. And who's really going to benefit? Because you know what? It really sounds good to say you have a half million dollar house or $1 million house. That's the tax assessment. However, are you really benefiting from that other than fake bragging rights? Because it's the city, if you don't pay those property taxes on $500,000 or $1 million, they will put your property up for sale for the next tax sale. And they'll resell that property to somebody else. All right. So you might want to consider, because in this country, You have a couple of options here. You can live in a municipal city, and there are 19,500 municipalities in the United States. Out of those 19,500 municipalities, only 10 of them have a population of 1 million or more people. And they're the ones who, if you go live in those city proper, you know, the tax bill. Like, I got a house in D.C. The tax bill's on that's $5,000 a year. If it's a vacant property, you know, because now in a lot of your larger municipalities, if nobody occupies a house, you got to go get a permit for that. You know, these larger municipalities are going to get you any way they can. Not all, but many. All right, so, and like I said, if you want to add on an awning or whatever, you know, it. And then some of them, you know, you can't even put on your own roof. You got to go hire a licensed contractor to put on a roof on your own building. So, you know, that's all part of municipalities, and they're different from municipality to municipality. But anyway, let's get back to the taxes. So let's say you got a tax bill, and now, you know what, we're going to come up with some tax, property tax solutions. If you can't pay the tax bill, how can you come up with the money to pay the tax bills to keep your senior partner, which is the local taxing authority, to keep them away from you so you can live in that home? And once again, a home is an intangible. It's a home. The concept of a home has nothing to do with a physical building. Homes are people are. You know, let's say you you're a mother or a father, and you have made up a home in a particular house in Butte, Montana. And you decide to pick up and move to Moscow, Russia, then your home to your children and your spouse or whatever is now in Russia. You've left the house behind. However, now we're going to go into some solutions on property taxes, because some type of property tax bills, particularly when it gets to time to where they're talking about they're going to auction off your property to satisfy the taxes. We're going to come up with some, well, we've got some solutions. If you got any, you can share them with us. But we're going to play this because the next piece from 60 Minutes, because eminent domain is another thing that you might, if you don't pay those property taxes, because eminent domain is a form of removing you off the using the local tax code.
My home is not for sale, and if my home isn't safe, nobody's home is safe.
What Jim Salee is talking about is the city of Lakewood, Ohio, taking his house, his home, through eminent domain to make way for a high-priced condo that will pay the city more in taxes than he and his wife Joanne do. And he says he's not going to take it lying down.
It's the close-knit, beautiful neighborhood. It's what America's all about. And I'm going to fight them tooth and nail. I've just begun to fight.
I'm Mike Wallace.
I'm Morley Safer.
I'm Ed Bradley.
I'm Steve Croft.
I'm Leslie Stahl. Those stories and Andy Rooney tonight on 60 Minutes.
Just about everyone knows that under a process called eminent domain, the government can and does seize private property for public use, to build a road or a courthouse. But did you know the government can also seize your land for private use if they can prove that doing it will serve what is called the public good? Cities across the country have been using eminent domain to force people off their land so that private developers can build more expensive homes and offices, which will pay more in property taxes than the buildings they are replacing. Under eminent domain, the government buys your property, paying you what is determined to be fair market value. But now, people who don't want to sell their homes at any price just to see their land go to another private owner are fighting back.
The bottom line is, this is morally wrong, what they're doing here. This is our home, and we're going to stay here, and I'm going to fight them tooth and nail. I've just begun to fight.
Jim and Joanne Salida refusing to sell the home they've lived in for 38 years in a quiet neighborhood of single-family houses in Lakewood, Ohio, just outside Cleveland. The city of Lakewood is trying to use eminent domain to force the Salides out to make way for more expensive condominiums. But the Salides are in effect telling the town, hell no, they won't go.
We talked about this when we were dating. I used to point to the houses and say, Joanne, one of these days we're going to have one of these houses. And I meant it. And I worked hard.
What'd you do?
I worked in the pharmaceutical industry. And we worked very hard for this and paid it off. And we said, oh, we've got it. We paid off our home. I retired. And now we're going to spend the rest of our days here and pass this on to our children.
But Lakewood's mayor, Madeline Kane, has other plans. She wants to tear down the Salit's home, plus 55 homes around it, along with four apartment buildings and more than a dozen businesses, so that private developers can build high-priced condominiums and a high-end shopping mall, and thus raise Lakewood's property tax base.
This is a project...
The mayor told us she sought out a developer for the project because Lakewood's aging tax base has been shrinking, and the city simply needs more money.
This is about Lakewood's future. Lakewood cannot survive without a strengthened tax base. Is it right to consider this a public good? Absolutely.
What you're saying effectively is that the Salit's neighborhood has to be sacrificed for the greater good of the city of Lakewood.
I guess I'm saying that that neighborhood is being asked to... And it's difficult, and it's unfortunate that they are being asked to give up their home.
They want this whole area because of the view of the park.
Well, it's a beautiful view.
It is an awesome view. They know it's gorgeous, and they want it. It's that simple.
This whole area is called Scenic Park, but that's the problem. Because it is so scenic, it's a prime place to build upscale condominiums with great views over the Rocky River. Those condos will be a cinch to sell.
But the condos can't go up unless the city can remove the Salits and their neighbors through eminent domain. And to legally invoke eminent domain, the city had to certify that this scenic park area is really, quote, blighted.
We're not blighted. This is an area that we absolutely love. It's a close-knit, beautiful neighborhood. It's what America's all about. And, Mike, you don't know how humiliating this is to have people tell you you live in a blighted area and how degrading this is.
You're the mayor. You know the place. Tell me what is blighted about that area.
The term blighted is a statutory word. It really doesn't have a lot to do with whether or not your home is painted. It is a legal statutory term
meaning
that is used to describe an area, and the question is whether or not that area can be used for a higher and better use.
What does that mean, a higher and better use? What's higher and better than a home?
The term blight is used to describe whether or not the structures generally in an area meet today's standards.
And it's the city that sets those standards. So Lakewood set a standard for blight that would include most of the homes in the neighborhood. A home could be considered blighted if it doesn't have the following.
3 bedrooms, 2 baths, an attached 2-car garage, and central air. Now this community is over 100 years old. Who has all those things?
You mean it's blighted if it doesn't have 3 bedrooms?
Those things I just told you. That's the criteria. And it's ridiculous.
You don't have central air.
No, and we don't need it because of the air. We always have a breeze.
Sure.
Right off Lake Erie, the breeze comes right through here all the time. We counted all the attached garages in Lakewood. There's 20 in the whole city.
We counted 20.
And by the way, we got up at a meeting and told the mayor and all 7 council members their houses are blighted according to this criteria.
My understanding is that using the criteria that are in place, more than 90% of the houses in Lakewood could be deemed blighted, including the houses of the mayor and of every one of the city council members. True? Do you have 2 bathrooms?
No.
Blight. 2-car garage?
No.
Blight. Is the garage attached?
No.
Blight. And your lot size is under 5,000 square feet?
Oh, well under.
You've called that area a cute little neighborhood. You didn't call it a cute little blighted neighborhood. I mean, you and I know that it's not a blighted neighborhood.
I would never personally walk that neighborhood and indicate that that neighborhood is not attractive or I mean, I would never say that.
It's a cute little neighborhood.
It is a cute little neighborhood. You'll get me to say it on the record. It is a cute little neighborhood.
Cute, maybe, but without those new condos, it won't produce enough property taxes to satisfy the mayor and the city council.
That's no excuse for taking my home. My home is not for sale, and if my home isn't safe, nobody's home is safe in the whole country, not only Ohio, but this is rampant all over the country. It's like a plague.
This is a nationwide epidemic. We have documented more than 10,000 instances of government taking property from one person to give it to another in just the last 5 years.
Dana Berliner and Scott Bullock are attorneys at a libertarian nonprofit group called the Institute for Justice, which has filed suit on behalf of the Salites against the city of Lakewood. They claim that taking private property this way is unconstitutional.
It is fundamentally wrong and contrary to the Constitution for the government to take property from one private owner and hand it over to another private owner just because the government thinks that person is going to make more productive use of the land.
Everyone knows that property can be taken for a road, but nobody thinks that property can be taken to give it to their neighbor or the large business down the street for their economic benefit. People are shocked when they hear that this is going on around the country.
And it's not just people's homes that are the targets in these eminent domain cases. The Institute for Justice has also filed suit against the city of Mesa, Arizona, to save Randy Bailey's brake repair shop, the shop he got from his father and hopes someday to pass on to his son. The city of Mesa is citing the need for redevelopment. He's trying to force Bailey to relocate to make way for an Ace Hardware store that would look better and pay more taxes.
Redevelopment to me is, work with the existing people there and redevelop.
Right.
Not, you get out, we're bringing this guy in.
Bailey's Brake Service has been on this corner for more than 30 years.
In Mesa, this is the corner, Main Street and Country Club. There's not a better corner in this city.
And business has been pretty good down the years?
Business has been awesome.
Now, what used to be in all of this property? I mean, everything else has disappeared.
The city come in and got immediate possession and started demolishing it, making it dirt.
The city has made dirt out of 3 restaurants and 4 businesses that once stood on this 5-acre lot.
And it's not just business properties that they're doing this on. You know, they wiped out 8 people's homes over here. You know, your home ain't even safe.
Bailey told us his neighbors let the city buy them out. But he's refusing to sell.
I'm standing in their way. I'm their thorn in their side.
A thorn in the side of Ken Linhart, who owns the Ace Hardware store a few blocks away. Linhart wants a much bigger store. He could have negotiated with Bailey, but instead, he convinced the city of Mesa to try to buy Bailey's land through eminent domain and then sell it to him.
The city of Mesa wants to move Mr. Bailey about a block away. And from what I understand, it's going to be a new building, new equipment, moving expenses, and everything set up for him. I don't see how Mr. Bailey's going to get hurt.
You can't replace a business in the same location. This place was built in 1952 as a brake and front end shop. I don't care where you move into City Mesa, it would never be the same.
So Bailey went to Linhart looking for a way to stay on his corner.
I tried to go to him and see if we couldn't work something out on this. And he told me, no, there ain't room for you there. We're going to let the city just take care of you.
Did you ever sit down and try to negotiate with him?
No, I never did.
Redevelopment seems to me to make obvious good sense. But the right of eminent domain to take one man's private property, Randy Bailey, to give it, in effect, to Ken Linhart for his private property.
It happens all over the country. Practically any town you want to go to, they're redeveloping their town centers.
Right.
Now, are we going to sit in Mesa, Arizona, and have our town center decay? As a citizen of Mesa, I don't want that to happen.
If I'd had a for sale sign out there, it'd been a whole different deal. And for them to come in and tell me how much my property is worth, and for me to get out because they're bringing in somebody else, when I own the land, is unfounded to me. It don't even sound like the United States.
And this isn't happening just in small towns. Right here in New York City, a few blocks away from Times Square, New York State has forced a man to sell land on that corner over there that his family had owned for more than 100 years. And what's going up instead? A courthouse? A school? Nope. The new headquarters of the New York Times.
It seems the world's most prestigious newspaper wants to build a new home on this block. But Stratford Wallace and the block's other property owners did not want to sell. Wallace told us the newspaper never tried to negotiate with him. Instead, the Times teamed up with a major real estate developer, and together they convinced the state to use eminent domain to force Wallace out by declaring the block blighted.
I challenge them. This is not blighted property, nor is this property over here blighted.
But New York State Supreme Court disagreed. The court ruled that the newspaper's new headquarters would eliminate blight, and that even though a private entity, the New York Times, is the main beneficiary, improving the block would benefit the public. New York Times executives would not talk to us about it on camera. Back in Lakewood, Ohio, Jim and Joanne Salid are still waiting for their court decision. Most of their neighbors have agreed to sell if the project goes ahead, but the Salids plus a dozen others are hanging tough.
I thought I bought this place, but I guess I just leased it until the city wants it. That's what makes me very angry. This is my dream home, and I'm going to fight for it.
Now the fight is moving to the ballot box. Lakewood residents opposed to the development have gathered enough signatures to force a citywide referendum on it come November.
All right, so now every... Listen, because we're in the United States here, let's just break this down. Every race or color, every party that was in that story, and particularly the Salid family, well, white folks, Randy Bailey, I hope, you know what, I'm going to see if I can get Randy Bailey, hopefully he's still alive, because that piece that you just heard, and if you want to watch the visual of it, go to YouTube and type in 60 Minutes Eminent Domain, 60 Minutes Eminent Domain, and then you'll get the visual so you can see what everybody looked like. But the... And then you can actually see the neighborhood, I mean, the Salid's neighborhood, it's a white picket fence neighborhood, all right? So in the United States, you really need to learn what municipalities are best, which are best fit for you, okay? The larger the municipality, unless you're wealthy or rich, I would recommend moving to those cities or moving out. The smaller the municipality, the better it is. And then, you know, some people live in unincorporated communities, which I think are probably the best places to live. But it all depends on the individual because everybody has their own likes and dislikes and comfort, preferences and whatnot. If you take the 10, like say there are 19,500 municipalities in the United States, there are only 10. They have a population of 1 million or more people. Those 10, and let's see, you got, in Texas, you got at least 3 of those cities, Dallas, Houston, and San Antonio in Texas. Then in California, you got, let's see, L.A., San Diego, and San Jose. So half of the top 10 is between those two states. But then you also have Phoenix, Arizona. Let's see, that's 7. Let's see, Phoenix, Arizona. You got Philadelphia is in there. New York City. I might be short of 1 or 2 or whatever. But the top 10, all with populations of 1 million or more people, they offer more comfort and conveniences to the people who visit there or live there. So the more comfort and conveniences that a community or a municipality offers, you got to pay for it. You got to pay for it. Like if you don't want to dispose of your trash, okay, a place like New York City, Philadelphia, Arizona, what's that place in Arizona? Phoenix, Arizona. You know, well, they have a sanitation department. Come out, and they will dispose of your trash. And a lot of those employees now, not all, but many, are now union employees. And union employees are expensive. And these municipal workers, you know, they have built into their contract, you know, cost of living raises, which who pays for that? You know, Joe Citizen does. Then you have, well, it's all connected. I think you get the idea on that. So you have like I say, the more comfort and conveniences that are offered in the city, on a city level, somebody, and that's typically going to be the real estate owner, the homeowner, in a particular municipality, and that adds up. You know, if you like turning on your water, you know, because the city will supply you with water, all you got to do is turn on the tap. You know, there's a cost associated with that. You like smooth roads with no potholes, you need municipal work. There's a cost associated with that. You know, those workers, you know, they want a retirement plan. They want a pension. There's a cost. And then they might be linked into a union. And they want, you know, cost. So the homeowner is paying for all that. And if you can't pay those property taxes or those municipal water bills or whatever, the city, because the city's got to make a payroll every 2 weeks. And then every month they got to make a pension fund payment to a whole bunch of people. All right. And then you've got people that might not be able to afford the housing there in that particular city. So, you know, you got a social services office. And then that's expensive. You know, the food stamps, EBT card, all that. But once again, you got a lot of conveniences that you're not going to get in a small town. A small town that might have a population of 1,000 people or less, more than likely they're not going to have a social services office. They just don't have the tax base to help people out like that. So there's no there might not be a police force, because police forces are expensive. Payroll every 2 weeks, pension, benefits, medical. But, you know, I like the small towns, like the teeny towns, where you can basically chart, you know, whatever you're going to do. But that's just me. I'm just one person. All right. So anyway, solutions. Some solutions. If you have some, 619-768-2945, call and press 1, and let's see what your solution might be. Now, if you've got a house and you need to make up those property taxes, all right, you know what? If you got an empty bedroom or empty garage, rent it out. Check now in some places, once again, in your larger places like a New York City, a Los Angeles, California, in those places, you might be able to rent out the room, but you might have to get permission. And you might have to get a permit. I know, like, if you want to do Airbnb in those top 10 largest cities in the United States, more than likely, you're going to have to get a permit from the city to see, I mean, so you can open up an Airbnb or a bed and breakfast, because they've regulated that. However, if you're in a town that's got like 10,000 people or less, you might not need to do that. You know, if you want to rent out a room or rent out of a garage, Airbnb or whatever, what have you, you can do it. So check with the locals on that. So renting out a room, renting out of the garage, that might be able to take care of your tax bill. All right. The next strategy, like I say, everybody's got their own strategy. Matter of fact, I'm just waiting for my laptop to reboot. Let me see if there's a black woman who was facing foreclosure, and my records on here have heard this before. She is a mother of seven kids to this day, but her and her husband were facing foreclosure, and she had a strategy that, well, you know what? I'm going to let you hear it from her directly.
Hello, everyone. In case you missed our very first event with Lady Lunch Club here in Nashville, we are at the beautiful Omni Hotel at the Kitchen Notes Restaurant, and I'm here with our featured guest, Mignon Francois, who is the founder and CEO of the Cupcake Collection here in Nashville. Mignon is so inspirational, and we are so excited to have her here. I wanted to just ask her a few questions so that we could share a little bit of her spirit here with you in this video in case you missed it, or in case you were here and you just couldn't get enough of it. So I'm just going to ask her a few questions now, and you guys stay tuned and make sure you check us out on our website, ladylunchclub.com, and across the social media platforms we'll be at Lady Lunch Club. So, Mignon, it is such a pleasure to have you
here. Thank you so much for having me. What a wonderful gift.
You are so successful in baking and being a small business owner, but I think there is so much about your spirit, like above and beyond that, that I think the world needs to see.
So
if you could just share a little bit with us about, you know, in your own eyes, how you see yourself and who you strive to be and kind of what you do to get yourself there.
Okay, so I see myself as famous.
I love it. You are famous. You are.
You know, a lot of people won't be honest with you and just tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not intended for it to sound arrogant. It just is what it is.
I love it.
I always knew that I was going to be famous.
Okay.
From a little girl, I would tell my mother that I'm going to be famous one day. And she'd be like, what are you going to be famous for? And I said, I don't know.
I don't know.
And she said, well, then be famous. And so there was just always something on the inside of me that said that people were supposed to know my name.
Mm-hmm.
And I believed that if with this fabulous name, I had to put some due diligence behind it to make it great.
Mm-hmm.
And so I needed to wake up every day on purpose to do something good. Now, I didn't get to that until I was 33 years old because I didn't think I was pretty. I didn't think I was good enough. I thought my nose was too big, my lips were too big, I wasn't smart enough. What if I don't say the right thing? What if they don't like me? And so it took for me to, my best friend took some pictures of me.
Mm-hmm.
And in my former life, I was a photographer.
Ooh.
And so she was saying, you always make people feel beautiful. I want to do the same thing for you.
I love it.
So I'm going to put makeup on your face.
Hey, that's a friend for you, right?
Yeah. So I'm going to makeup on your face, and you just show me where to point that camera and click
mm-hmm.
it. And I didn't think she'd be able to do that. You know, this was before filters.
Okay.
before iPhone.
Hashtag no filter.
And she took a picture of me, and the pictures came back untouched, and I was like, wow, that girl is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to sit with myself and find out that was me.
Wow.
And I just kept saying, that is me.
Yeah.
That is no one else. That is me. And it was in that time that I began to know the meaning of my name. My name means beautiful.
Wow.
And this is what I've learned over time, that you need to know the meaning of your name, because either you will live out the meaning of your name
mm-hmm.
or you will live out the purpose of the adversary set up against it.
Wow.
And so I always thought it was ugly, but my name said that I was beautiful.
Right.
And when I saw myself as pretty for the first time, I began to walk in rooms and own them. And I didn't do it on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
It just was, I I was pretty enough to walk in the room.
It was
right.
A change in the attitude. And
right. That I could walk, I could set them straight, I could gather myself around my clothes, right?
Yeah.
You know, get my attitude.
Yeah.
I have a be attitude.
Yeah.
And when you think about what be attitudes are,
mm-hmm.
I was still meek. Mm-hmm. I was still humble. And I'm going to always be those things. And even though I'm saying this right now, I'm saying it for the benefit of someone else who doesn't know that about themselves,
mm-hmm.
who needs to know that you're all that.
Right.
It doesn't matter what somebody else has to say about you. And it was in that time that I learned the meaning of my name, and then I began to live out the purpose set up for me. And that's why I could do anything.
Wow.
Because I believed it then.
Mm-hmm.
And then other people, when you believe it about yourself, other people will tack on and believe it too.
Exactly.
But people will believe whatever they see you doing.
Exactly.
You know, mm-hmm. it's just kind of like, you know how they say the rich get richer
uh-huh.
and the poor get poorer? It is, not only is it truth, it's a biblical
mm-hmm.
concept.
Mm-hmm.
It's a biblical truth. And that which you have, when you use it for whatever little it is that you have,
mm-hmm.
it becomes more.
Right.
Because the currency that's performing for you is the faith that you're putting into
yes,
it.
Yes, exactly. And I think a lot of people look at that scripture, you know, and think of it in terms of just money. But I think it, you know, expands to all aspects of our lives. Like, you know, that what you have and that you're grateful for and that you, basically what you're working with, if you're actually using it, you know, they say you use it or you lose
it. Yeah.
If you're actually using it, then it grows and it expands for you. And, you know, it does also work in the negative sense as well. It's just like what you focus on will expand and multiply. And so I think that's a really interesting point, you know, to bring up on how, you know, whatever it is that you're focusing on, that you're grateful for, that, you know, that you feel like you have, is going to expand and grow for you.
That's a really powerful point that you said. You get more what you focus on,
mm-hmm.
whether that be negative or positive.
Exactly.
I had a situation in my team where this really great little girl, captain of the cheerleading squad in high school, she's going to cheer here at Tennessee State University. Gigantic dimples that take over her whole entire face.
Uh-huh.
A smile that looked like I created it on her.
It.
But she had attitude problems.
Mm-hmm.
And people were writing me saying, that little girl right there, she does not represent you. And
uh-huh.
I was going to have to let her go.
Yeah.
And I sat her down and said, look, I love you, but I will love you from across,
mm-hmm.
from across the town.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't represent who I am. And so we were focused on the negativity of what she would bring to the table. Girl, if one more person writes me about
like,
you,
this is
you
it.
Are going to go. Because I'm so committed to training and raising them in the way that they should go. Not just mine, my village.
Yeah.
Right? I wanted to give her another opportunity. She had like five opportunities. Like, girl, look, you just don't want to get this year.
I am trying.
You got, everybody can't sing back up for Beyonce.
Yeah,
okay?
Right.
So you only want the best.
Right.
I want the best
mm-hmm.
singing backup
mm-hmm.
for me too.
Exactly.
I'm taking my cues from
I love
Queen Bee, right?
I love it. You can never get too much Queen Bee.
Right. And so as I was thinking about, I was getting more negativity. We were focused on what she wasn't doing, and I decided one day to wake up and focus on the positive in her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, girl, you are too pretty for that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or, girl, those symbols like that, the world needs to see them. When I focused on that for her, it turned around that
wow.
day.
Yeah.
That day. And so she's still, the other day she had a talk with the manager. She's like, I just don't understand why people don't get it. And I'm like, really, girl?
Like, oh, how quickly we forget. Awesome. Okay, so we know a little bit about you. We can see, you know, I feel like it's purity in the spirit. I love it. I connected with you just right from the start. So what is next for you? What, you know, exciting things do you have coming up? Where do you see yourself going? Like, what can we anticipate?
Oh, I want to be doing more of telling people what they can do if they
okay.
believe. I have a really packed schedule in 2018 that's going to take me traveling
mm-hmm.
to into the world to spread this joy. I am on a journey to joy.
Yes.
And I have this mission in my life that people who come in contact with Mignon Francois need to leave feeling joy. And if they don't do that, then I have failed at my mission.
Mm-hmm.
But my word for the year is joy and finding joy in the journey, because you can't have a journey without joy.
Yes.
And so it's like we focus on what the first thing we do after we've completed a task is what did I do wrong so I can next time not do that?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of focusing on what did I do well or what brought me joy, and I'm looking for helping people to find joy. I told you earlier I want to play hide and seek with Joy,
uh-huh,
so can't nobody
exactly
find her. Everybody's definitely
uh-huh
seeking her, but nobody can find
mm-hmm
her. And I want to be up on purpose about finding joy in 2018. But we just got picked up by the Home Shopping Network.
Oh my goodness, I'm so glad you mentioned it. I was so excited. I was watching the video like, yes, yes, yes.
That is a dream come true. Someone asked me if I ever thought that that was going to happen to me, and I said yes.
Did you? I love it. You're like, yeah, I absolutely thought it would.
I didn't know that, you know.
Right.
But like I told you before, like I knew big things were happening.
Yeah.
I just had to prepare myself. There is a great thought, a thinker of our time that said that a man's opportunity is only as good as what he prepares himself
oh
to receive it.
I love it.
And I just always see success as a crash, a really bad crash,
mm-hmm,
at an intersection where there are no survivors
mm-hmm
except for success.
Mm-hmm.
It's where preparation and opportunity collide.
Yes.
And the only thing rising out of the ashes is success.
Oh, I love
and
it.
And that's really what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so in 2018, I'm doing more of that. I'm going to be a part of the American Dream program
okay
that just started on the Home Shopping Network.
Okay.
And they said that they believe that I'm one of their next big discoveries.
Yes.
And that was just like,
that is so amazing.
So exciting. And then, you know, just more of nurturing and developing talent
mm-hmm
for people to be who are going to come into my footsteps, to whom a lot is given, a lot is required.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to my daughter last night, and I was saying, you know, it's hard to be in this place where you just would rather just go find the best of the best.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can find a diamond and polish that up.
Uh-huh.
But diamonds don't look like diamonds. Many people pass them by.
Right.
And I'm looking for diamonds in the rough to polish up because I want, you know, when I meet my creator, I want him to say, what did you create, Mignon?
Mm-hmm.
What did you feel? What did you do? And I want him to be pleased.
Yes.
So in 2018, I'm doing more of that. But what I'm most excited about is in 2017, we got voted as the best cake in Tennessee.
I believe it. In America, in the world.
So our sweet potato cupcake
represents. Oh, that's my favorite.
Yeah. And so I've opened up a new store in New Orleans.
Awesome.
And I'm going to be opening, you know, more opportunities for people to have franchise opportunities.
Okay.
I'm going to limit it, but yeah. I am going to do it. So that's some of my plans.
Oh, that's so exciting. Okay, now if you had to give some advice to somebody out there who's looking at this, who's watching this, and who said, you know, can I do this?
Oh, the thing I would say to them is don't try to be like me. You are the best you that there ever will be. And I want you to spend time being more of that. If I could tell people anything that you're looking for, you have it.
Yes.
It's already on the inside of you. I couldn't bake out of a box. And now I'm an award-winning,
wow,
accomplished pastry chef. They're asking
wow
me to create products on
wow
shelves, and people are standing in lines to receive it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe it. I'm like,
like, is it really?
They want to know what I have to say. They want to
wow
they want to taste what I've done, and now it's in a place where there's almost nothing I can't make. You know, nothing I can't make, but I know it's not me.
Yeah.
It's who I allow to work in me.
Mm-hmm.
And we're arrogant beings that believe that we come up with anything. But these ideas are strong
yes
on the inside of
yes
us. I heard, I do a lot of reading.
Mm-hmm.
And most of my reading is done in the car. So I listen to
uh-huh
a lot of books,
mm-hmm,
you know, on CD. And I heard a philosopher say that the average American gets 4 good ideas a year. That
wow
if they would focus on one of those,
wow,
they would be a millionaire.
Wow. That's an awesome,
right?
Yeah.
One good
wow
God idea.
Yeah, that's all you need. That's all you need. Oh, I love it. So there you have it. Just a little bit of Mignon right here in this little segment for you. But, you know, there's so much more, and I wish we had more time to, you know, to put more content here on this video. But make sure you continue to keep up with her, follow her, because greatness is following her. So make sure you keep up. And we look forward to seeing you guys and meeting your beautiful faces in the future. Bye.
Do you all believe as a race, I'm not talking about you specifically, but do you believe as a race, African Americans, we play the victim?
Hey, man.
I have a dream.
No. I'm just going to leave that as a one-word answer. I'm not even going to jump in deeper than that. No.
Yeah, I'm on the side of absolutely not, and I will leave it there until somebody disagrees.
Yeah, then I'll jump back in. And now I'm gonna step back.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm gonna be real. I'm gonna say yes.
Let's go.
I'm gonna say yes.
Give me an example.
See, it's a loaded question just because I'm not going to sit here and say every single African-American sides either on the yes side or on the no side.
Mm-hmm.
I say yes to mainly spark conversation, but also I know you're not talking, you said not personal experiences, but that's all I got to go on. I will say, you know, just based on where I am in life, I've gotten a lot of pressure from African-Americans feeling like, you know, I've gotten to where I am because of white people, or you can't speak, you didn't grow up like I did. Like, I came from the hood, you know, I didn't have the same opportunities and privileges that other people had. And though, you know, I believe that to be true, in today's America, I really do feel like anybody has the opportunity to rise to the occasion. Now, is it easier for certain people over others? Yeah, I mean, let's be real, yes. Like, that's 100% true. But, you know, I just keep hearing, like, systemic oppression, this, that, and the third. Like, yeah, we get it. I know. Like, we all know. Like, we all know. But the opportunities are still there. Will you have to work a little bit harder to get to where you want to be? Absolutely. Because of how you look? Absolutely. I'm a testament of it. Anybody gonna say nothing? I want to hear this.
I think it's impossible to accuse us of playing the victim. You're talking about a 400 plus year head start for a particular set of people. You're talking about systematic oppression. That's what I meant by a post-traumatic state. Is we're at this stage in 2020. We're trained to say, yeah, it's unequal, but that's just not okay to me. I don't think we should ever get to the place where we just accept inequality.
Correct.
I'm not encouraging stagnation, so I agree with you. I'm not encouraging throwing in the towel like, yo, it's not fair. That's not what I'm saying at all. But while striving to be your best self, you should never accept inequality. And I think that's what we're being trained to kind of just be like, yo, this is just the way it is, and to no longer call it out. And I'm not even saying we got to go picket, protest. I'm not saying none of that. But at least in conversations like this, if we're not going to set a standard, no standard is going to be set. Nobody else is going to stand it. Nobody else is going to set it. You're talking about, statistically, like factually speaking, at the onset of the 20th century, you're talking about land owners only giving land to specific races. That's generational wealth.
Yeah.
You're talking about bank loans only being given to specific races.
How can you?
That's generational wealth.
Correct.
So we can't. It's not even like this is ancient history. That's what blows my mind. This is recent history.
But he didn't say that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
What he said was, "Do we play the victim?"
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very different. You're aware of the things that have happened, but are you victimized as a result of it?
So,
do you say, this is what I can do with what I have been allotted or whatever my place in life is? Are we playing the victim is the question.
Well, I think we have to define play the victim.
Okay.
I think we are the victim.
Because anybody can be a victim.
I think we are factually a victim.
So all races can be victims.
What do we call in playing the victim?
What do you see that as then?
What do I see what as?
Playing the victim, like when you hear that, like what does that trigger for you?
Play the victim means I'm acting like something is being done to me that's not being done
to me.
Always complaining about
our history.
That's what I hear when I hear play the victim. Like you're taking the position that something being done to you and nothing's being done to you. That's somebody playing a victim to me.
This is what I
hear. And that's not the case to me.
This is what I hear.
Yeah.
Get over slavery. Stop talking about it. We're all equal now. You should be ahead. You should be further than where you're at. Stop talking about the old days. I'm gonna stop right there. Yeah, that's what it triggers in my head.
Mm-hmm. So, to say like we can't. I don't think you can outrule or like just say, hey, some black people aren't playing the victim because everyone uses excuses.
Correct.
And people can be playing the victim by whatever excuse they may bring. But like you said, like we weren't given an opportunity basically to build that generational wealth. And without that opportunity, we don't own anything. So we are having to kind of look for employment like at wherever you work. And even you said there's one person at D1 that's black. And we're 15% of the nation. That's not an accurate representation of America. So therefore, we may not be playing the victim, but we're getting hurt in corporate America or wherever part of life. That's kind of just statistics.
I'm going to agree with him. I also don't like the term playing the victim because it does sound like you're alluding to something that is not real.
Exactly.
And I think if we I'm not dismissing or negating the effects of 400 years of oppression.
Sure.
And, the things that we've seen and been through. I'm not dismissing any of that. But if we cut it all off and we started with a year ago, we are still being victimized by the stuff you have to see on TV. You have African-American boys who at the age of 11 or 12, all they have ever seen were African-American boys being killed on TV.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they've ever seen. They've not known the life without it because they've watched this happen since they've been old enough to understand.
Mm-hmm.
They are victims. You can go into a grocery store. You can go into an amusement park. You can go anywhere and be mistreated, and you will be a victim today. We're not talking about the victimization only of the yesteryears. You can be a victim tomorrow. And I think if we're all honest, we have been in places where you have been the victim.
That's right.
You were either wrongly accused or wrongly criticized or maybe let's not even make it a negative thing. Looked over for a job unjustly. It's happening. So there's a rationale to the relevancy of still being victimized.
Yeah.
And like I was to her point, it's not even like this is ancient history. We're talking about 1960s, 1970s, the Civil Rights Act was just passed halfway through the 20th century. Like, it's not even hundreds of years ago. Like, there are people alive still, who went through segregation that are still alive. Like, it's not even,
of course.
You know what I mean? It's not even ancient history. So I can never agree that the responsibility is on us to fix the mistakes of others. I could never agree with that. I just can't.
And it doesn't take away, something that I said on the back end of my last answer. At some point, as a family, as a community, you can gather the people you love and say, let's get us out of
this.
Correct.
And then you could say, well, we're no longer playing the victim. We took pride and took our own responsibility. And then you can build all that up, and tomorrow you can go somewhere and still be disrespected.
To that point, in my initial answer to you, I said I'm not making an excuse for stagnation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not no excuse to be stagnant.
Yeah.
It's not no excuse to not grind and hustle and get out here and get it. But even if his question is about us as a race and as a culture,
mm-hmm.
and if I get my family together and pull my family up, that's my family.
Exactly.
You feel me?
That's
not balancing the scales.
That's right.
You know
and
what I'm saying?
It's very interesting. Your point is very, very interesting because I could be an extremely successful black man in today's America and still go somewhere tomorrow and be looked down upon
because of
what I look like.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask you, because I remember like Booker T. Washington, like the 1890s, to kind of offset the Jim Crow laws. He was
not
like,
saying
hey,
I'm that old, right?
You remember him, right?
Yeah. I didn't go. Make sure you know I didn't go fool. All right, brother. I'm the historian.
He said basically.
Is my gray showing that much, though, for real?
No, I was going to ask you this. So you said basically to offset the Jim Crow laws that were put in place, we had to educate and be entrepreneurs. And you two have both done that.
Yeah.
So I'd like to hear your experience because this is, 130 years later from him saying, hey, we need to mobilize on our own, get education, and be entrepreneurs. And that will create our own system of wealth. But, I mean, you're only one person. It's hard to pull up a whole group.
Of course.
So I'd kind of like to hear y'all's experience as being entrepreneurs.
You can talk many
options. I was going to let you go first.
Simone owns her own shop, too, so I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Oh, okay.
I'm taking it in. I'm sorry. Listening right now.
Well, like I said, I was kind of raised in an entrepreneurial family, right? I was always taught, don't work. I'll just be honest, my father, don't work for the white man. That was it, right? You get education, anything you can take, put it towards your own business. Put your own 2 feet on the ground. Save your money. You know, get a hustle. You know, he's showing me all these things to do. So it was always in my mind that I had to work for myself. The only way I'm going to come up is to work for myself. So I was never trained to, you know, you're going to get a great education, then you're going to go get a great job, and then you're going to be successful, then you're going to raise a family. That was out. Go get your own brand. Raise your family. Give your brand to your family. Mm. Let them continue that generational wealth. So that's the way I was taught. Mm. And that's the way I got to keep it moving.
So give me, rephrase the question that you had specifically.
Basically, what I was saying is Booker T. Washington said to offset any type of segregation or discrimination or from playing the victim, we need to educate and be entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
Has that experience kind of help you push through, and have you been able to bring others up because of your entrepreneurship?
Okay, so thank you for that question. I definitely believe that entrepreneurship is freedom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's ultimate freedom. I was writing down a thought just yesterday as I was flying through Chicago that one sign of enslavement is a name change. That when people say that you're something, that you're not. So if I was to like go and address the same idea with biblical characters, we could look at Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
Mm-hmm.
That was not their name.
Yes.
It was their name that they were given in enslavement. And I can just imagine how they were in a room together and, you know, one of them yelled, hey, Shadrach, dude, that is not my name. I'm Toby. you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I feel like we have a responsibility to know who we are.
Yeah.
We have a responsibility to do our due diligence to make our name great. That somebody can walk around and call you a liar. Is that who you are?
Yeah.
That's not who you are. Somebody can walk around and call you a thief. Is that who you are? That's the name that the enslavement has given you, right? And so I think that the only way that we can exercise true freedom is in ownership of our stuff, of ourselves, of our actions, of the things that we create, that we can be makers. I think that this is the time for all hustlers to unite, you know, that we all can make whatever we want to be a part of. We no longer have to sit back and say, oh, it's because of what you did to me. Listen, I was molested as a child. So if we want to go back and talk about victimization of the things that people have done to us, we can do that. Or we can rise above it and we can say, well, this is who I am now. This is what I'm going to do. When I started my business, I could not bake, not even out of a box. I didn't have any money. I didn't have any credit. I didn't have any experience in the business. Nobody was going to give me a loan for anything. I was losing the house that the very bakery exists in right now, 11 years later. Because when you put your mind, this is what I was saying earlier, we can be focused on what happened for us instead of what has happened to us. I believe that it is that blood running through my veins that had things taken from her. You know, it is that blood running through my veins that said, no, you can't come in here. It's that blood that is running through my veins that made my great-grandfather one of the first to be able to sing where he sang. And those are the things that I'm using today to get me from where I am to where it is that I want to be. And it's those things that I'm giving to my children and saying, this is what you have. We're not talking about what we're not. We're talking about what we are.
Mm.
And I think that's the difference.
Mm-hmm. And when we talk about what we are, what are we doing right as a culture that's setting up our children to have wealth? What are we doing right as a culture to where our children's children will know our names? Are we doing things right as a culture to change the narrative of our finances of our children?
I can only answer that as an individual and then see what we and my wife also try to do and spread, right? You know, we're all about giving back. We're all about showing and proving. You know, I want to be that beacon that the young brother say, you know what? I want to do what he's doing. You know what I'm saying? I want to go out and get my own wealth. I want to start my own business. And if I wasn't there, maybe he didn't see me. Maybe they never came to my restaurant. Maybe it's just me, you know, but when you're there, we're going to teach you. We're going to give you tools. We're going to teach you about customer service. We're going to teach you how to run a restaurant because that's what we have to do. It's my duty. I have to teach. And again, I can only speak about me. I can't save the world. Yeah. But I can save the people that watch me. I can save the people that touch me. I can save the people that work for me. I do my best, right? You know, so, you know, I just look at it as you have to be that beacon, right? You got to be that shining light to change everything around you. You know, be that leading example.
But I don't think that's anything new under the sun, what you're saying.
No, it's not new.
I think that's what this community has been. You know, it has been a community of people who say, I'll teach you how to do this.
What community are you talking about?
The Black community. Has gone, I have plenty of examples in my life of people who stuck their foot in the door so that I could pass through.
That's not always out the way we do things, though. You know.